This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. The Iranian government has rejected President Donald Trump's offer of talks without precondition. A foreign ministry spokesman Tuesday said sanctions and pressure are the exact opposite of dialogue. In a tweet, Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said threats, sanctions, and PR stunts won't work. But at a campaign rally late Tuesday, Mr. Trump remained hopeful.
I hope it works out well with Iran. They're having a lot of difficulty right now. I hope it works out well. And I have a feeling they'll be talking to us pretty soon.
Mr. Trump decided to withdraw from the 2015 international nuclear agreement with Tehran in May, citing its malign activities, a move Iran's president, Rouhani, Tuesday called illegal. The U.S. is preparing to reimpose sanctions that could cause further problems for the Iranian economy. Political analyst Mazyar Akhazadeh said to show goodwill, the U.S. should suspend sanctions and then enter dialogue. He suggested Tehran would drop its demand the U.S. return to the nuclear agreement. U.S. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert held out the hope that the Iranian government would change its policies.
We hope that this country, that regime, will lead to a better life, will change its policies so that its people can live a better life.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has no plans to meet on the sidelines with his Iranian counterpart during a Southeast Asian summit in Singapore this week. Three Russian journalists were killed in an apparent ambush in Central African Republic. The three were believed to have been assigned to investigate the activities of private military contractors, which reportedly have carried out clandestine combat missions. South Africa's ruling African National Congress plans to push ahead with plans to amend the constitution to allow for the expropriation of land without compensation to the country's black majority. Most farmland remains in the hands of the white minority. This is VOA News. In Mexico, dozens were injured, although there were no fatalities after an Aeromexico passenger plane crashed shortly after takeoff from Durango en route to Mexico City. The twin-engine Embraer 190 took off in heavy rain. Flight 2431 may have been hit by a strong air current. Scott Hamilton is with a Seattle-based aviation consultancy, Lehman Company.
That kind of lends itself to the idea of a microburst or a wind shear. Obviously, they're going to be, the investigators will look at if there are any wind shear detectors there at the airport and what they might show. They'll look at radar images to see what kind of storm cells there were. So I think that's probably going to be their initial focus.
The plane had 97 passengers and four crew members on board. In Yemen, the Shia Houthi rebels said they've halted attacks on shipping in the Red Sea to support peace efforts. Saudi Arabia suspended sending oil exports through the Red Sea channel following attacks on tankers last week. Meanwhile, the aid agency Oxfam has warned the more than 8 million people coping with malnutrition in Yemen will double if the fighting closes the country's ports. Abby Maxman, president and CEO of Oxfam America, said the U.S. can play a positive role.
Support the Security Council and the special envoy's efforts to bring parties to the table and hold the coalition actors to account to come to the table and work together for a sustainable peace.
She said only a political solution will bring peace to Yemen. In Syria, heavy fighting continues between pro-government forces and Islamic State fighters in southern Daraa province. They've also claimed to have taken full control of the Yarmouk Basin bordering Israel and Jordan. Japan's defense minister, Itsunori Onodera, said Tokyo has asked Russia to reduce its military activity on the disputed Kuril Islands. He said he hopes dialogue and cooperation will lead to an easing of tensions on what he called the northern islands, former Japanese islands now occupied by Russia. The two countries have not signed a peace treaty ending World War II because of the lingering dispute. Former Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif is back in prison after being briefly hospitalized for an ailment. Sharif and his daughter jailed in July for corrupt activities. Their appeal is to be heard Thursday. Nigeria's Senate President Bukola Saraki has become the latest senior politician to abandon the ruling All Progressive Congress Party and return to the People's Democratic Party. Dozens of lawmakers have defected after becoming disenchanted over the performance of President Muhammadu Buhari's administration. Mr. Buhari is seeking re-election next year. Still no result from Sunday's election in Mali, where three presidential candidates have now claimed to have made it to the two-candidate runoff. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Abate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, the first day of August, and here are some other stories we are covering. Zimbabweans are still waiting for the final results of Monday's election, but the main opposition is claiming victory.
The results show beyond reasonable doubt that we have won this election and that the next president of Zimbabwe is Advocate Nelson Chamisa.
Tendai Biti is an official of the opposition MDCT Alliance. It looks like Sunday's presidential election in Mali might go to a runoff. Three Democratic Republic of Congo opposition candidates are in a statistical tie ahead of the December 23rd presidential election. And an official of South Sudan's Civil Society Alliance flees the country.
If we are saying the corruption must stop, the service must be delivered to the people, there is no electricity in South Sudan, what interference are we up to?
Kalua Agol-Kausch is Secretary General of the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance. The daughter of Angola's former president was a no-show to answer alleged corruption allegations. And the Speaker of Kenya's Parliament summons two journalists to appear before a committee. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabweans are still waiting for final results of Monday's presidential and parliamentary election. The Electoral Commission Tuesday night announced parliamentary results from seven constituencies, but Commission Chair Priscilla Chigumba was quoted as saying the presidential results will be announced after all the results have been received and collated. But as viewers Anita Powell reports from Harare, celebrations erupted in the streets of the capital on Tuesday as opposition supporters marked what they said was a certain victory.
A flurry of emotions as Zimbabwe breathlessly awaits results of a pivotal election. On Tuesday afternoon, opposition supporters took to the streets of central Harare, celebrating what party leaders said was a resounding victory in Monday's poll, despite a lack of official results from the Electoral Commission. The poll was effectively a race between President Emmerson Mnangagwa and opposition challenger Nelson Chamisa. However, the celebration was tinged with menace. A VOA reporter spotted five water cannon trucks, each loaded with police, making their way through central Harare, just a block away from the celebrations. Although results had not been announced as of Tuesday evening, the two main rivals have already aired their views on social media after Monday's poll. Chamisa tweeted Tuesday morning that his party was winning resoundingly, based on results they had collected from most of the more than 10,000 polling stations. Party official Tendai Biti.
We have now received from our agents across the country results of the 2018 election. The results show beyond reasonable doubt that we have won this election and that the next president of Zimbabwe is Advocate Nelson Chamisa.
Also Tuesday, Mnangagwa urged caution on Twitter, urging Zimbabweans to exercise responsibility and restraint by patiently waiting for the ZEC to declare the official outcome. But he noted, the information from our reps on the ground is extremely positive. All this talk, the largest local observer mission said, is worrying. The Zimbabwe Election Support Network on Tuesday praised the poll for being smooth and peaceful, but network chairman Andrew McConey said such political sniping and rule-breaking could tarnish the election. On Monday, the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission said it had reported two presidential candidates to police for campaigning outside the allowed window, but the commission declined to name them.
One of the main issue which really is of concern to us is the issue of hate speech in the period leading to elections. It's something which the political players from across the political divide must work on. Again, you saw that when ZEC indicated that campaigning was going to end by 12 midnight on Saturday, we saw campaigning continuing on social media. We saw press as being held. We also saw the president of ZANU-PF also appearing to continue with this campaign on Facebook, which was also broadcasted, I understand, on ZBC. So those issues are of concern to us. If we want to make our election management board look credible, we also must respect in some way their pronouncements.
Lawrence Mundara, a political science lecturer at the University of Zimbabwe, says this is a delicate moment for Zimbabwe, but added that the people showed maturity and a desire for calm. If anything happens, he says, the population won't be to blame.
I'm not sure how Zimbabweans will react to the results, but knowing how Zimbabweans are, they won't take that route. If there is any violence, this violence will be sponsored by those candidates who would have lost. But in terms of the people, I don't think they will go that far. Our political culture in Zimbabwe is one which is non-violent. The violence has always been sponsored by politicians, not by the people. So any violence that will come as a result of the outcome should be squarely a blame laid on the politicians themselves and not the people.
Final results are expected by August 4th. Anita Powell, VOA News, Harare.
As vote counting continues in Sunday's Mali presidential election, a third candidate, Aliou Diallo, has claimed enough votes to enter a runoff with President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta and his main challenger, Soumaïla Cissé. Meanwhile, and as Brian Postumus reports from Bamako, the turnout has been disappointingly low, partly because of security concerns from Islamist militants in parts of the country.
While early indications point towards a runoff in Mali's presidential election, a third candidate on Tuesday claimed enough votes to enter a second round. A spokesman for gold magnate Aliou Diallo claimed he had come in second in Sunday's election with enough votes for a runoff on August the 12th. President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta and his main challenger Soumaïla Cissé had on Monday claimed to make it to a second round. Keïta's campaign maintains he is in the lead. 24 candidates entered Sunday's election to lead a nation suffering from lack of security and frequent attacks by Islamist militants. The Mali Citizens Observation Pool noted violent incidents all over the country during voting. Ibrahim Sangor is its chief observer.
À Kalabankoura, ACI, dans le district de Bamako, au centre de vote Saint-Joseph, dans le bureau de vote numéro 7.
He says they included voters angry at the absence of observers from opposition parties at polling stations, as reported in the capital. Sango also noted violent incidents in the regions of Mopti, Taoudeni and Timbuktu. The office of Mali Prime Minister Soumaïla Boubé Maïga said Monday more than 700 polling stations reported violent incidents, ranging from burning election material to attacks against election officials. But the office says this represents less than 3% of voting stations in Mali. Mortar attacks near polling stations during Sunday's elections were blamed on Islamist militants. Nobody was injured in the attacks. The violence contributed to a low voter turnout, raising some questions about the legitimacy of whoever wins. The Malian electorate has demonstrated its indifference, says voter Ahmed Traoré. He says there were no crowds, no queues. It had all been going smoothly. But their participation rate had not been what it should be. And that is also because people have not been collecting their voter cards, says Traoré. Observers said voter turnout rates ranged from 20% in the northern city of Kidal to 44% in the Sikasso region in the southwest. Turnout was estimated at about 30% in the capital, which was not expected to vote for Keïta. It will be up to Mali's Ministry of Territorial Administration and Decentralization to call the election. The Constitutional Court then validates the results. The court's decisions have been controversial in the past. Some observers say the court is too close to the president. Observation Pool President Mamadou Seydou Traoré has this recommendation for the court. A decision must be motivated based on the law and on jurisprudence, he says. The Constitutional Court is the ultimate judge, so a good judgment would contribute to peace and social stability, Traoré said. The European Union Observer Mission released a statement Tuesday saying that the court should prove its transparency in any decisions. Mission leader Cécile Kyenge also called on the candidates to avoid announcing their own vote estimates before the electoral administration. If no candidate wins more than half the votes, a runoff planned for August the 12th will be held. Brian Postumus for VOA News, Bamako.
Today's Wednesday, the first day of August, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. A new survey conducted in the Democratic Republic of Congo shows three opposition presidential candidates in a statistical tie ahead of that country's December 23rd general election. The poll, released on Tuesday, show opposition leaders Moise Katumbi and Felix Tshisekedi both with 19%. Jean-Pierre Bemba, a former vice president recently released by the International Criminal Court after his war crimes conviction was quashed, garnered 17%. The survey was conducted by the Congolese polling firm Bercy in conjunction with the Congo Research Group at New York University. For more on the survey, VOA's Peter Clotty reached Francesca Bomboko ahead of the Congolese polling group Bercy.
What we found that the votes are going to be very fragmented. And what was surprising for us in the latest poll was that we had like three contenders from the opposition neck to neck. Moise Katumbi, Felix Tshisekedi, and Bemba, who just got out of prison. There's a three-way tie, which is extremely surprising. We didn't expect that. For the first time in our poll, Katumbi is not the first. So I think he lost quite a lot of ground, but not being in Kinshasa. And Bemba, released from the International Criminal Court, actually is giving him a push up. Basically, I mean, it's a statistical tie. Basically, he has 17%, Tshisekedi has 19%, and Moise Katumbi has 19%, but our margin of error is 3%. So basically, it's a tie.
The issue of Moise Katumbi not being in DRC because of concerns that he could be arrested, as well as Jean-Pierre Bemba, the former vice president, coming in, having any significant change in the landscape of the election, particularly when President Kabila has yet to officially declare whether he's standing or not standing, irrespective of accusations that he would contravene the Constitution?
Definitely. I mean, Bemba, by his release, is actually taking away all the MLC. MLC is a political party. All the MLC vote, definitely. The number of vote that he gets is exactly the same as the number of vote that this party will get. Moise Katumbi, as we know, doesn't have a political party. So Bemba coming in, for instance, just to be more specific, he's taking away from Moise Katumbi province of Bakongo, and he's taking away most of his vote from Kinshasa, the capital city. And now we find Moise Katumbi only leading in the eastern provinces. So this is totally a change of landscape. It didn't used to be the case. Tshisekedi is basically staying very stable at the center with the two Kasai.
Your polling also show that 62% of Congolese do not trust the Independent Electoral Commission to conduct free, fair, credible election scheduled to be held on December 23. What accounted for this mistrust?
I mean, this is something that we saw since the beginning, and it's keep increasing, and now it's basically stable. It's about 60%. But what's new in this poll is about the same percentage of people who trust the International Criminal Court. So this is something very surprising. And also, just about the same percentage will not want the election to be delayed, despite all the irregularities that we see and that the polling show that people were very much against it. Any delay, it's unacceptable for them.
Did you find in your poll that the Congolese are excited about the announcement of the date that they will have opportunity to choose their leaders on December 23?
Definitely. The fact that they don't want any delay is definitely show that they're very much excited about that.
Francesca Bomboko is the head of the Congolese polling group Bercy. She spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the Belgian capital, Brussels. The daughter of former Angolan President Eduardo dos Santos could face possible arrest for her failure to show up after being summoned by prosecutors. Isabel dos Santos, once head of the state-owned Sonango Oil Company, was subpoenaed to answer questions about some dubious transactions she made amounting to millions of dollars. Dos Santos, currently out of the country in Portugal, has denied any wrongdoing. In another development, Angolan President João Lourenço has dismissed the National Police Chief Alfredo Eduardo Mingas after he was involved in a car accident that killed two civilians.
This car accident emerges with a lot of rumors in internet, social networks, and so some sources are asking if the commander-in-chief was in good conditions or alleged drunk. So speculations also rise because the policy doesn't give to the public a clear explanation on the causes of the accident. And at the end of the day, João Lourenço administration in disarray because, as everybody knows, one of the themes of the Lourenço government is the fight against impunity and corruption.
Well, Maria, you said the accident is scandalous. Who was driving the car? Was it the police chief?
That's the problem. He was himself driving the car. Then he just struck with another small car where two civilians, some young man and a young lady, were inside. The young man just died instantly, and some hours later, the young lady also died in the hospital.
Was the police chief drunk?
That's the question. Some sources in the internet and the social networks are saying probably he was drunk. But this is not clear. The process is under investigation.
Mario, I want to talk to you about Isabel dos Santos, the daughter of the former president. She failed to appear at her first summons by prosecutors to answer questions about her time running the state-owned oil company Sonangol. What happened then?
In fact, Ms. Isabel dos Santos just published a press release in the last Tuesday denying that she was notified by the general attorney to give explanations about the time when she was the president of the management board of the Angolan oil company, Sonangol. According to the current president of the management board, Mr. Saturnino, she is accusing of put out of the country $38 million U.S. dollars allegedly in Dubai. Mrs. Isabel dos Santos denied the mismanagement of several sums of a million of U.S. dollars at the time she was as the president of the management board of Sonangol.
So what's next for Ms. dos Santos?
So according to the law, the Angolan judicial authorities have to notify two times Mrs. Isabel dos Santos. And after three times, she must be forced by the police to get there and explain. So hoping Mrs. Isabel dos Santos will be back soon to Angola.
That's veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpavai speaking with me from the capital, Luanda. The Secretary General of the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance has fled to Uganda. Keliol Agot Koch says he escaped from Juba last week after claiming his life was in danger. Agot says men in plain clothes raided his office and broke furniture. He says some officials within the ruling SPLM party are responsible for harassing outspoken civil society leaders.
There are members within the office of the president and within the national security that have been organizing and arranging with Akoja Jang, who is the director of the state affairs within the SPLM, just to dismantle the Civil Society Alliance office and then to override it and work for their own interests, pretending to be civil society members.
Why did you escape from Juba?
I think for the moment, it is really not favorable for me to be in Juba. I have to be here for some time. And in fact, I will go to Juba because that is my nation. I have never been silent in Juba and I continue to be vocal until we realize freedom of our operations, freedom to pursue our objectives.
Another member of a civil society was reportedly picked last week by the national security in Juba at Juba International Airport, and up to now he's still in a security detention. Are some of your members under detention in Juba?
Yeah, they were released yesterday. Some members who were trying to intervene while these people were breaking in into our office, they were detained, they were arrested. There were five of them. And the issue of BR, also we have spoken about it. He's in detention now, and that is something very unfortunate. You cannot be arrested just because of being a civil society activist, talking on national issues, correcting them without any person or any affiliation to anybody.
The South Sudan Civil Society Alliance worked very hard during the referendum to advocate for separation of the country. Why is the government of South Sudan now arresting the same people who worked for the referendum, who worked for the independence of the country?
Because we are very vocal. We don't fear them. It began in 2012 when we demanded the publications of the lists of the corrupt 75 members. that were alleged to have stolen public money into abroad, $4 billion. And therefore, when Deng Athuay presented our petition, 3 days he was missing in Juba. And all of us were hiding in Juba. So this is a life that we have experienced. So this has not been one scenario. The interference and the civil society affairs by the national security and the government as a whole has been a frequent action and a process that they are always doing.
The government of South Sudan has been on record accusing the civil society groups of interfering into the country's politics. Is the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance interfering into the politics of the country?
What interference are we up to if we are saying the corruption must stop, the service must be delivered to the people? There is no electricity in South Sudan. There are no basic services like hospitals are not there, like roads are not there. The economy is too bad. People are in abject poverty. So how can we be silent about this? These are not politics.
Kello Agot Kausch is the Secretary General of the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance. He was speaking to VOA's John Tanza of the South Sudan Focus in Program. Kenya's National Assembly Speaker, Justin Muturi, has summoned two journalists to appear before the Parliamentary Powers and Privileges Committee tomorrow, Thursday, to reveal the sources of their articles alleging corruption in Parliament. The journalists are Anthony Wangi and Dina Ondari of the People Daily. Wangari says the sources the Speaker is requesting are members of Parliament themselves.
Yeah, we reported on alleged corruption within parliamentary committees.
Why are they summoning you? Are they saying your story is incorrect?
Yeah, they want to know the source of the story.
Do you stand by your report?
We stand by our report. But anyway, the source is the members of parliament themselves. On 4th of July, the matter of corruption within parliamentary committees came up, and the leader of majority and minority leader confirmed that there were underhand deals within committees, and the members had made the committees to be cash cows.
Is it true that some members of parliament have asked that some of you journalists be banned from covering parliament?
Yeah, that's all they want.
The fact that you've been summoned to parliament, what impact do you think this might have on journalists covering the news?
It will be retrogressive. That's what we've been fighting for. Yeah. By the way, I want to know something. That the member who did this matter is a member of Entebbe. His name is Dr. Robert Kos. He's the one who led this committee, energy committee, to audit it by a government parastatal, to audit it somewhere in central Kenya, where they were bribed. In fact, that's the basis of our story. They were given money, they were bribed, and they do a good report on this particular prosecutor.
It seems to me also that the Standard newspaper is being questioned for writing a story about the salary of the judiciary. Is that true?
Yes, it's true. Because the members are worried that the members of parliament and members of county assemblies might borrow a leaf and go to court and challenge the same.
The Speaker said that you've been summoned to give you a fair hearing.
And I think he was right, because they need to hear from us. Because it's good to state that the same members are the source of our story. They are the source. Those who did not get a share of the loot gave us the information. That's the position.
And when do you appear? When are you supposed to appear in Parliament?
We are supposed to appear before the Parliamentary Committee on Thursday morning, but we are here to confirm with our bosses. Our bosses have advised us that this is a matter with the Media Council of Kenya, who will give us the way forward. Kenya Union of Journalists.
Now, it seems to me that the Journalist Union is not in favor of this summer.
That's true. The union, you are not supposed to appear.
That's journalist Anthony Mwangi of the People Daily of Kenya. He was speaking with me from the capital, Nairobi. And that's it for this Wednesday, August 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotin and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Barton saying have a good day.
Summer may be winding down, but the battle for the best song of the season is heating up here on Border Crossings. Join host Larry London for an hour packed with the biggest songs of summer 2018. We'll be counting down all of the contenders as they duke it out for the title of this season's hottest song on the airwaves. Will your favorite track reign supreme? Tune into this special episode of Border Crossings on August 6th at 1500 Universal to find out. Only on VOA.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.